Welcome to another week of Press Start here on KCPR San Luis Obispo 91.3 FM, your second to last week ever of Press Start on KCPR, which is makes me and you a sad panda.
That's depressing.
Yes, it is.
Wait, we're one sad panda? We like combine powers and become this Voltron panda?
Yeah, like an Aegis Wing, where you connect the ships, you connect the pandas, and they become slower but more powerful.
Or sadder.
Or sadder. Coming up on the show today, we've got some good stuff for you, some recollections from almost 10 years ago. At least from my end.
Wait, how long have you been doing this show?
not show recollections, I mean, like, recollections of my own from 10 years.
Okay.
That should have happened 10 years ago that are just now happening. So I'm a little behind, as you can tell. But I know at least one listener out there will be happy to know that I've sort of made the jump to this particular game series recently, and we'll talk about that. But the second to last show, man.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad. It's been fun. I'll save all the crying and the tears for next week.
You gotta keep doing something.
Well, I will. You can hear me on the GamesAreFun.com podcast.
I have heard you on the Games Are Fun podcast, in fact.
Yeah, and I didn't mean you specifically, but yes, I meant the ubiquitous you, you know. So, ubiquitous with a capital U, huh? Okay, so this week on the show coming up, we've got news, music, as usual. There's a couple of interesting stories this week, including, of course, we've got our Xbox Live Arcade release, like every week. We've got the Wii Virtual Console release list. And ActRaiser came out for download last week.
I heard that.
Yeah, I've never played ActRaiser, but I kind of want to play it now.
I think you ought to play ActRaiser. It's a good game. It's a good mixing of genres in such a way as to not mess up either one of them.
So it's like, is it, it's an action RPG?
It's at its core, it's an action game, but there's two action elements. There is an overhead map where you're supposed to be like a god and you're supposed to be, you know, building up your town and everything. And so you have this little angel that runs around and, you know, does stuff, knocks away monsters who try to take your villagers, so you let your villagers build. You have various spells you can use. There's kind of a puzzle element, because you need to use some of those spells to break through other things, like... Oh, I don't even remember. It's been a while ago. I remember you could blow stuff up really good.
That's always fun.
Yeah, so you do a lot of blowing stuff up real good. Sometimes that opens up, you know, new passageways for your villagers, but it's kind of this, you know, basic city-building sim. But to purge the enemies, you know, purge the evil out of the land, you have to send yourself down as an avatar and go play a side-scrolling fighter, or a side-scrolling action game.
That's cool.
Full of slashing and magic and all the good stuff.
I'm down with that.
It's actually a lot of fun because there's this immediate gain for going down and beating the level. And depending on how well you've done in the overworld map, you get more points or more spells for the side-scroller.
I'm down.
So, yeah,
I'm definitely
it's a lot
down.
Of fun.
Now
the
I just
music
need,
is really good.
Now I just need a Wii.
Yeah. Or a Super Nintendo.
Or a Super Nintendo.
That's how I play.
That one's probably a little bit tougher to find.
It's actually, I found one in Arroyo Grande, or Atascadero, actually.
You found a Super Nintendo?
I found a store that had a whole bunch of old systems.
Did they have the old games as well?
They did.
Did they have ActRaiser?
You know, I think they might have.
Wow.
I didn't buy it because I have it. I did find the Guardian Legend.
Ooh.
I've wanted to find that for a while. Now I need a Nintendo.
Yeah. So ActRaiser was last week, and there was also JJ and Jeff, and Kid Chameleon came out last week for the Wii Virtual Console, too. This week, Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link, came out. Milon, Secret Castle, and Toe Jam and Earl 2.
I can't believe you passed right by JJ and Jeff.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know about this game?
No.
Oh, I recommend you go Wikipedia this game sometime, or Google it, or name of another website. Just go find out.
Okay.
I won't talk about it.
Okay, we'll talk about that next week. We'll talk about JJ and Jeff. So that's the Wii Virtual Console. Early this morning, last night, whatever you want to call it, Pac-Man Championship Edition came out for the Xbox Live Arcade.
Champion Edition.
Championship Edition. In celebration of the currently going on Pac-Man World Championship in New York that's being put on by Microsoft and Namco.
I heard about that.
Yeah, so this new Pac-Man, this is the third time a Pac-Man game has been released on the Xbox Live Arcade. And
there are two others.
Miss Pac-Man and the normal Pac-Man.
Really? I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. So this is the third one, but this one, I don't know how you could possibly make more retro or retro game, but they've sort of like made it more modern so that it's more retro, if that makes any sense.
It makes no sense.
Okay, so imagine Pac-Man playing the game. Now imagine Pac-Man in a disco.
Oh, I see okay. where you're going with this.
So they've changed. Okay, so there's new levels now, new mazes, which is like the first time that's happened to Pac-Man in 26 years or something. And all the levels and everything are all like pulsating, flashing lights that change colors. Like, you know, they sort of flow. It's like a disco.
Okay, so I saw a video of this. Now I think I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah. So 1980s Pac-Man has emerged into the 21st century only to go back to the 1970s.
He's just going
to
team up with Guitar Hero 80s, and they're both going to go back to the 60s.
And they're both going to grow long hair and headbang. Championship Edition is actually...
Rebellious Pac-Man Jr.
Championship Edition is actually pretty cool. I mean, from what I've seen, I haven't got a chance to play it, but like they've sped up the game, so it's a lot faster and more hardcore. And there's new like sound effects, and everything looks more modern. It's crisp, except for Pac-Man. He's still kind of that jaggedy round shape in the ghosts. But that's pretty cool. They updated the game, and there's some new modes. Let me find it here. Well, in any case, there's new modes, like I said, that speed up the gameplay. There's new modes that allow you to sort of, they're like timed, and you have a time limit to complete them. There's levels that actually change while you're playing. So like walls, like openings will close off and other ones will open. So that's cool. There's one where you play in the dark where you can't see where you're going. Only you can see Pac-Man.
This is just a prelude to Pac-Man Tactics, I'm sure of it.
Turn-based strategy RPG.
A Pac-Man board game.
Pac-Man has had his own kart racer and an adventure game, 3D platformer. So it was not out of the question to see.
Oh yeah, he had that pack and roll game on the DS.
Pack and roll and Pac-Pix.
And Pac-Pix. Except I didn't like Pac-Pix that much.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he might be making a resurgence, or he might be being used and abused by his masters at Namco.
Well, if they take Pac-Man or something intrinsically fun like that and make it all trippy, so it looks like Geometry Wars or like Rez. I mean, there's this Luminous. There's this subgenre of games now where, I don't know what you'd call them, but they're like games that I'm pretty sure would look great on acid.
Synesthesic experiences.
They aren't quite synesthesia because they don't ascribe weird, they don't force you to synesthetize, but they're really close.
Synesthetize?
Yeah.
I photosynthesize. I don't know about you.
Synesthesia is where it's a psychological condition.
Yeah, you confuse one sense for the other.
Yeah, like you'll see certain letters always show up, even if they're written in black and white, they show up with like a hue to you. Like, I think somebody actually documented which letters and numbers show up as which colors. It was really weird. Apparently it's consistent.
That's interesting.
So I have no idea. I'd love to see a game that tried to fake that. But yeah, it's Pac-Man would look great as a trippy game.
Well, this is kind of how that is. It's sort of a trippy disco light show. And the only problem I have with it is that it's 800 points.
Mm.
And the other Pac-Man, other two Pac-Man releases have been 400 points. And if you already own those, why would you go and pay again for this?
Now, see, if I find a cool game like that at, you know, some used game store for, you know, say $8. I know it's actually a little more, $9-$10. I would say, hey, that's cool. That might be a fun little purchase. You know, it's not that much money. But when it's on Xbox Live for, you know, 800 points, I look at that and I say, oh, that's cute. It's an 800-point game. But I look at that and say, compared to all the other games on this service, that's about average, maybe kind of expensive. And I certainly don't want to have to spend $20 to buy one of those huge points cards just so I can buy this cheaper game. So I feel like there's all these hidden costs overhead.
Well, that's the beauty of electronic processing, you know, electronic charging,
etc. It really is.
You're big on the point cards, I know.
I like the point cards. Well, so I refuse to give them my credit card if I can help it.
Oh, yeah.
So I've been doing all my gold and all my points through the cards, which is a great option because I don't trust them yet.
But you always got to go down to the brick-and-mortar store to get it.
Yeah, you do. I prefer brick and mortar stores anyway.
Yeah.
But
you're old school.
Sort of. I kind of wish I could. I kind of wish I could just buy incremental points on some website, you know, through live service. So it's a merchant transaction where they don't store your credit card.
Or like
I would do that.
Or like through PayPal or something.
Something like that, or an equivalent service.
Yeah.
Just nothing where I have to leave my number on hand, where they could theoretically access it anytime.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they do something with that, you could always sue them.
I don't know. I don't think it's so much that I'm worried that they're going to charge it for random stuff, because I'm sure they could make it legal somehow. It's in the terms of service. I read them. But I'm worried about somebody else getting the number from them.
Mm.
I mean, I'm already a hypocrite because I do this through Apple Store, but there's no option.
Their network is pretty secure.
I have heard there's been no trouble with them.
Yeah.
And so I don't know.
Well, so far, so good. In any case,
Microsoft is not Apple. That's my stance.
That is for sure.
There's no value ascribed there. Just they're not the same company.
All right. So that's what's coming out on the Xbox Live Arcade, or that's what came out this past night. I'm behind. Like I said, I'm 10 years behind.
10 years behind.
10 years behind. I'm just
press
now.
Let's start bringing you the news.
10 years
10
ago.
10 years behind.
All right, so 1997, okay? 1997, the PlayStation classic, Castlevania Symphony of the Night, is released.
Yes.
I hear it's great, but I don't own a PlayStation during that era, so I have to sit by and let people enjoy it. Fast forward 10 years, and you've got me sitting at home last night playing the demo of Castlevania Symphony of the Night on Xbox Live Arcade, which is awesome, by the way, the fact that I can do that. I'm really happy. And it's actually surprisingly good. The only other Castlevania game that I had played before was Circle of the Moon for the Game Boy Advance, and it was not that good. I didn't like it.
Circle of the Moon was really well received, but I was kind of the same way. I didn't quite jive with it.
Yeah, I didn't.
It was a good
either.
Game. It just wasn't Symphony.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I wanted.
Yeah, it's very different. I don't know. I wish I could tell you how. Like, there are some subtle nuances, but honestly, Symphony just feels different. But in any case, I didn't like Circle of the Moon. I got rid of it. So that was the only Castlevania game I had ever played. I had played like 10 minutes of the N64 one, the one that was like 3D. So,
oh man,
I'm sorry, but
I've always wanted to try that game. I hear it's as bad as Superman 64.
No, it's not that bad. It's actually pretty cool, I would say. But some people didn't like it because it wasn't 2D. It wasn't what they grew up with. In any case, last night I downloaded Castlevania Symphony of the Night for the Xbox Live Arcade, and I was surprised at how good it is. And so I played it for several hours yesterday, and now I'm like pretty far in the game. I love it.
That is a great game.
It is a great game. I can't believe I didn't play it sooner. Thank God for the retro service on Xbox Live Arcade and other, you know, e-download places, but it's a great game. I love the animations to Alucard. He always feels like he's like a really like super-powered, like, vampire dude. Because, like, when he jumps, there's, like, the glowing trail mm-hmm. behind him. And
there's a lot of small stuff in that game that isn't necessary.
Yeah.
And this didn't occur to me the first time I played through it, but the second time when I was paying attention, there's a lot of stuff he can do. He has, you know, he has a high attack, he has a low attack. He also has a low forward attack.
How do you do that?
Down, you hold down and forward and attack.
Really?
Instead of attacking low, he attacks at a downward angle, which actually hits lower.
I didn't know that. There were
yeah,
these like
I didn't either.
Frog enemies.
It turns out
hit.
There are some places that it's really useful.
Yeah. I knew he could do one of those while jumping.
Yes, he can do it while jumping. Which is also a little thing they put in that didn't expect, is that he can do that while jumping. So I start looking at this character and I start thinking, you know, the character kind of comes alive when I realize there's a lot more things you can make him do that are just kind of, you know, oh, why can't I do this? Well, now you can. You know, he can dash backwards and then cancel into a lot of his attacks.
Yeah, that's really cool.
It's just, there's movement options.
I love the graphics. I love how his Coke. His cloak.
I like how the Coke makes it all wavy and filtery and just kind of has after him. I love the Coke.
I meant his cloak. Cloak? Like a cape?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, good. I know. I like the effect of like his hair and his cloak when he's like running and doing things. It's all very cool looking, and the game is like, you know, as we've come along, and the Game Boy Advance versions of Castlevania have sort of gone anime, the anime route.
They have.
And Symphony of the Night really stayed with that gothic, like sort of gritty, like dark Dracula, the book, the novel, Dracula-esque like atmosphere, and that's cool. And like all the music, like there's a lot prevalent use of pipe organ. and all of those cool, like, creepy instruments. So the music is awesome.
The music is quite good.
Yes.
And there's actually, I discovered quite a lot of Castlevania kind of history going on in that game. Rondo of Blood, which was a TurboGrafx game, or piece, I don't know, it was one of the NEC systems. Most of the sprites from Symphony are in that game.
Really?
Like, I think that's one of the reasons they look so good in Symphony is because they were redone and a lot of them were reanimated. So you got these extra animations and they had time to go in and put more details in because they weren't all created new for this game. They had more time to fine-tune. That's why your sprite has so many neat animations. That's why there's all this hierarchic modeling of sprites to make essentially a larger sprite that you don't realize is multiple sprites.
That's cool.
It's really neat. If you ever go back and play Rondo, which is coming out on the PSP.
Yeah.
If you can see the... I don't know if it has the original graphics.
It does.
It does? Okay. Check them out. There's... A lot of the music is similar, too.
I'm going to have to because, you know, I've never been a huge Castlevania fan. I never. I mean, I just kind of looked at it as a series that wasn't for me. But after playing Symphony of the Night and now Rondo of Blood's coming out for the PSP, I got to pick that up because I'm enjoying Symphony of the Night immensely. The one thing I like about Symphony of the Night is that the game isn't too big. That's one of the other things I found, like, in the Game Boy Advance version. The game was too large for me. Or same thing I find in, like, Metroid Zero Mission or Metroid Fusion. The game is just too large. I can't keep track of, you know, what I've missed. And Symphony of the Night is just the right size. It's just... Dracula's Castle is not too big. The map only takes up the screen that you can see. So there's no scrolling around that you have to, you know, figure out where you go. And everything, I mean, it's just large enough to say, wow, this is a huge castle, but it's just small enough to say, wow, I'm inside a castle. And, you know, you don't get lost. And I think that's the best part. I hate when 2D exploration games are too large.
I don't like that. I had a lot of fun with the first DS Castlevania for that same reason. I felt the size was about perfect.
Dawn of Sorrow.
Yeah, Dawn of Sorrow. I didn't quite get into the feel of the second one. It's really good on paper, but for some reason I just didn't quite feel the same groove with it. I don't know why. I'm still a good game. But Symphony and Rondo are really the two big ones in the series. Symphony for this exploration, all this. Rondo because it's basically Symphony, except more restrictive movement, much more like the old Castlevanias, and the game's linear. The levels go in order. However, each level has multiple paths depending on how you play. So there's still kind of an exploratory element because you want to, you know, there's usually a path if you get hit during a difficult part and a path if you make it through. So you always keep wanting to try to get the good path to see if you can, you know, see what you can see. And Maria from Symphony, who you see, is a child in that game and playable.
Interesting. Very interesting.
But yeah, so those are the two big stars. And I hate to tell you, you're playing the best now.
I know.
And it's never going to get better
than
this. But it is pretty well. Now,
I was just about to ask you, is Symphony still the high point in the series?
People debate whether Symphony and Rondo is the high point. I, while playing Rondo, was saying that I liked it better than Symphony. And I'm not sure. I go back and forth on them now.
Okay.
Now, interestingly, now listening to what you said about this game, and I can, this is an inside joke that is inside to me and everybody listening,
that
pretty much
no
everybody except
about
you.
Okay.
There's this one of gaming's better surprises is in Symphony, and we've talked about this a little bit before.
Okay.
But I stopped short of telling you what it is. We got really close to telling you what it is when we interviewed Hunter Goff.
Right.
And you'll get it when you see it.
Okay.
You'll be like, oh my gosh. But yeah, I'm pretty sure you haven't hit that point yet.
No, I just got to the chapel.
I want to see your expression when you find out what it is.
Okay, next week I will I'll be sure to update you on that because, you know. But yeah, I'm all around enjoying Symphony of the Night, and I figured I had to start with the best one, you know? Cuz I might now go and play the DS versions, you know. Who knows? Or maybe I'll go back and pick up Area of Sorrow on the Game Boy Advance.
Oh, you have a better game to play through yet. That game is good.
Yeah. But I'm loving it so far. So thank you, Castlevania, for providing me with this. I'm on a 2D gaming spree right now. Odin Sphere, which is awesome.
It's awesome for everybody else.
Yeah, except you, because you
bought
can't
it the
get
other night
work.
And it won't start. It won't run on my PlayStation.
Well, you're always welcome to play it at my place.
I think that's
want.
What I'm going to do. If my disc doesn't load over there, then I'm going to take it back.
Okay, good idea. All right, well, we're going to take a music break. We've gone on a little bit there at the beginning, but we will come back and do the news. But in the meantime, what is, when you think of Castlevania Symphony of the Night and you think of its music, what is the other only genre of music that would go together with it perfectly that's not in the game so far?
A genre of music that would go in with it?
So I think Castlevania music, you know, and another genre of music combined.
I don't know, opera?
European disco! So...
Oh, wait, no, you're playing this song.
We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll get to the rest of the show. In the meantime, enjoy a little different take on the gothic tunes from Castlevania. Welcome back to Press Start. You just heard some disco Castlevania Symphony of the Night. Everyone knows Alucard really likes to cut a rug on the dance floor. That was, by the way, I should probably tell you who that was by. That was by Akuma Joe Belmont. It's a remix.
That's an appropriate name.
Yeah, there you go. Appropriate. let's talk about the news. No, I did not just find a boomerang, but I did find an
article. I found a boomerang.
You found a boomerang. What I did find is an article about a game, thanks to your quick eye. Okay, so imagine this scenario. You're in a flame retardant suit, head to toe. You can't catch on fire. You're playing Dance Dance
What would I do if I couldn't catch on fire?
What would you do? Now imagine you came down with the urge to play some Dance Dance Revolution. Okay?
As happens frequently when I'm wearing flame retardant suits.
Of course. And now imagine you're standing in front of a 30-foot screen, and there just happens to be a Dance Dance Revolution machine set up for you.
This is fortuitous.
Fortuitous. Now imagine that the machine is surrounded by 3 flamethrowers, and that every time you mess up playing Dance Dance Revolution, you get blasted with flame.
It's a good thing I brought this flame retardant suit.
Very good.
Otherwise, I'd have to reload and try again.
No, I'm not making this up. This is an actual thing called Dance Dance Immolation.
This group is great. The group is called Interpretive Arson. And actually, I first heard about this at Burning Man last year. I wasn't there, but reading about it. Yeah. It was apparently a big hit there.
I can only imagine with the copious amounts of contraband drugs and substances, I can only imagine that a game called Dance Dance Immolation is popular.
Well, apparently, the thing is, these people all had to be pretty sober because they were setting up, fire.
Well, I'm sure the people setting it up were sober. The people taking part, I question the sanity in that practice. But anyways, no, you play in this flame retardant suit, so you don't, like, obviously die, and you get blasted with flame if you mess up.
And the sky gets blasted with flame if you do it well, so it's like a big light, fire show.
If you're good. Otherwise,
otherwise, you're on fire.
Yeah. I can only see myself playing this game, never, actually, because I'm horrible at Dance Dance Revolution.
I think I would like to try this game just to see.
Oh, I know you would. Well, you're good at DDR, and also...
Not in a giant firefighter suit, I'm not. Not going to be doing any handstands or face plants or any of that stuff.
So you know how, like, when you fail at DDR, if you get, like, a really bad score, you get a black skull next to your letter score?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay, well, certain versions of DDR. Well, I think this is taking it to a whole literal extreme. I always love getting the black skull because it's like, yeah, black skull. It really shows that you
are totally
horrible.
Metal.
Yeah. Well, that's all that would be left of me if I were to play this game.
Uh-huh.
Yes. But fun times, and if anyone knows of a place in Slow where you can play some DDI, then,
Let's see them bring that to Xbox Live Arcade.
Everyone knows
requires accessories.
Everyone knows add-ons don't sell. Please, come
guitar
on,
Guitar Hero.
That's true, but
frets on fire.
Does the guitar shoot flame?
It should.
That's right.
I tried to mod a Game Boy once to shoot lasers.
I suppose you weren't very successful.
I ran out of money when it was time to buy the laser.
That usually happens. Yeah. What kind of laser?
I was just going to buy one of those pen lasers.
Okay. It wasn't going to be like a cutting laser.
No, just like solder the switch into like the A button. So I'll be playing a game, this thing would be going off.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't like it would be able to cut through doors and stuff.
No. It'd actually be kind of dumb. I could have mounted a flashlight to it with largely the same effect.
Okay.
But then I couldn't tell people my Game Boy shot lasers.
Yeah. Fun time.
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
Okay. I'm still thinking about what it would be like to play DDR with flame shooting at my face. On to more serious topics, we got an email from a listener last week linking us to an article about a new game bill taking place in New York, a legal bill, not like someone's being billed for. Because, every time you buy a game, you get billed for it.
I was thinking like a duck bill.
Yeah, that kind of bill, too. No, not that kind. Okay. Like a legislative.
What would a
action
game bill be? Like, compared to a duck bill, would that be like, when people get really intense on some games, they kind of purse their lips together?
Or like bite. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they bite their lower lip, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
So not that, huh?
Yeah, well, maybe. That's all a right. good. I mean, But in serious news, a game bill, New York Senate. They approved a bill that would, first of all, it would make the ESRB ratings mandatory. So stopping there, that's kind of unnecessary. Right here, example, this so far, an example of inflated bureaucracy. Because pretty much every game, I don't think there's a game publisher out there who doesn't submit ESRB ratings,
well,
and even though it is optional.
Stores don't sell stuff that's not rated.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the big companies, GameStop, Walmart,
and
Walmart even enforces that you have certain ratings.
Yeah.
I think GameStop might too, and for the AO stuff.
Yeah, and not a lot of that comes out. But yeah, no, they won't sell it if there's no rating. So that's right there. That's not needed in the bill.
So comic books came out, a long time ago, Music is old news. Movies are old news. This is current news. That's just kind of what's going to happen. I look at, you know, when you're, when certain things happen, there are just side effects. I consider this kind of a side effect of games becoming popular. And I've wanted games to be popular for most of my life, and now they are, so...
It's just kind of hypocritical, because it goes on, this bill goes on to establish an advisory council to monitor the ESRB. So, in the state of New York, there's going to be a a bureaucratic council that will judge, that will make recommendations to the ESRB.
Well, clearly the ESRB couldn't, you know, control themselves because nobody was watching them, so we need to have someone watch them. Well, clearly this new group won't be able to control themselves, so I say that we propose a new group to watch this other group.
Yeah, right. We'll start it right here, right now. You and I, we're going to keep an eye on this advisory board.
How are we going to do that? It's in New York.
Oh. Well, it is a good idea, though. I do think that, this is sort of getting out of hand.
Well, who watches the guy who watches the guy who watches,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Down the load? Then you say the watchdog at some point.
Yeah.
But I look at this and I say, okay, we're mandating the ESRB control everything. So everything has to pass through them. That gives them, it's like saying there was an organization that could say any movie is not worth printing by saying we refuse to rate this. You know, it's a form of censorship, although I hate, everybody cries censorship whenever anything happens. If you're talking, somebody's thinking about stopping you from talking, and that's censorship. Oh noes. But I don't know. I disagree with anything that basically provides one central source that says, okay, this media is good, this media is bad.
Yeah, I agree. And here's what is even more sort of infuriating, because no lawmaker is going about this in the correct way, in my opinion. So this bill makes it a Class E felony to sell or rent games that include depictions of depraved violence and indecent images to minors. Okay, that's not so bad. I'm not advocating selling, you know, like, those kinds of games to minors.
That's like every game.
Well, kind of. Here's what the bill says.
Stomp turtles, Mario.
Here's what the bill says. It calls depictions of depraved violence and indecent images. Any photographic, photorealistic, or other similar visual representation of the rape, dismemberment, physical torture, mutilation, or evisceration of a human body.
Okay, now that I agree with.
Yeah, I agree with it.
With the exception of dismemberment, only because there are so many games that do that and make it funny because it's so unrealistic. It's kind of one of those, haha, look at the game violence.
Right.
But every single other word there is like this edgy, that's the same sort of stuff that is banned in snuff movies.
Right, but how many games come out that feature rape, physical torture, mutilation, or evisceration? A Gears of War features evisceration, maybe. Mm-hmm. You could say, but other than that, no games come out that have that in them.
Well, so that brings up a good point. Maybe this isn't so bad.
Yeah,
I just, you know, basically said, okay, first I said, there's, you know, I disagree with any centralized ratings board that can say this is good, this is bad. And then I thought about it and I said, wait, no, I agree with this where movies are concerned. Maybe I should agree with this where games are concerned.
Yeah. Because
when you have really edgy stuff, when you have really edgy movies, there's nothing really stopping you from sending them over, like, the internet. You just aren't going to sell them. There's no money-making impetus to produce these sorts of things. And with video games, maybe that's a good idea. Maybe the really edgy stuff, really offensive material shouldn't be banned, just should be banned from sales. So you can give it away all you want. You know, put it online, but just remove any financial benefit to doing so. That way people can only be doing it for making a statement.
But I don't even think there's a precedent here. I mean, not that I'm disagreeing, like, okay, if you want to make a law against that, that's fine, because no game comes out. There's no game, there's been no games commercially sold on the market that feature, like, brutality like that, that feature rape, that feature physical torture or mutilation.
Have there?
I can't think of any.
I can't think of any other. Of course, I like to play games that have, you know, blue skies and giant robots and things like that. You know, if there were games like that, I probably wouldn't know about that.
I mean, like I said, Gears of War was probably the most violent game of last year, and it had evisceration in a sense, but it was, I mean...
There were implied rape scenes in Silent Hill. They weren't humans. But the idea
everyone
was
there. Everyone out there is like, ah.
Well, the idea was there. And there was some game that featured rape as a central, like, tenet of the plot. It wasn't shown, but it was...
Silent Hill 2 was kind of like that.
Yeah, there was... Oh, it was Xenosaga. Xenosaga 2.
Really?
Oh, no, it was Xenosaga 1.
Really?
Yeah, they changed the scene for the U.S. market. Huh. It was, one of the characters is a cyborg, and they...
Cosmos.
It was actually Momo, if you played the game.
Oh, right, Momo.
And she wasn't really a cyborg. It was technically this, you know, biology, whatever. Yeah. She was part mechanical and had data in her. And the way the character was, the evil guy was trying to get the data out was described as rape and was depicted largely as that in the Japanese one. In the U.S. one, they changed it to some, like, mystical science fiction-y thing where he, you know, waved his hand and, like, magical data runes started coming out of her forehead. But the voice acting did suggest that that was not what was going on.
Yes.
And it was implied. And if you got sufficiently into the plot, you were supposed to hate the character because he had basically raped this underage girl. And indeed, that was the effect created.
Right.
But I hated the character.
Well, but it was also only implied as well.
Yeah.
It wasn't depicted in the game. It was implied. And this bill is stating actual, you know, depictions of that happening. And I can't think of any game where that's happened.
There was no straight up visual. The word in this article is visual representation.
Right. And you mentioned Silent Hill, like Silent Hill 2, Angela, the character Angela, she's in Silent Hill because she's sort of tormented by the fact that she was, like, abused by her father when she was a child. And so she's in Silent Hill, like, trying to come to terms with that. So, I mean, that was also implied. There are scenes where that's implied, too. But none of it's outright, you know, shown. And then another part of this bill, indecent images, would be visual representation of a person or a portion of the human body which depicts nudity, sexual conduct, or sadomasochistic abuse.
There goes imports.
Well, Japan, you know. Japan. But again, another example.
Games.
I mean, there's nudity. The most recent game that features nudity that I can think of is God of War.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just like topless nudity or whatever. But sexual conduct. When was the last time you, like, there was a depiction of sexual conduct, like, outright?
God of War didn't show it.
No, exactly. No
there
game.
There was the scene that wasn't in Grand Theft Auto.
True, that was, but and that it wasn't technically supposed to be in the game.
And there was Indigo Prophecies.
Oh, don't even get
it. I can't even say what the popular name of the scene over the radio. But suffice to say, in the scene in question, it's really cold outside.
It's also really awkward. It's like really awkward.
That was after that game had gone to heck.
It's really awkward. It wasn't so much like, it was awkward and also kind of funny at the same time. Like funny.
Well, the second,
like,
half of that game is pretty much just pure comedy.
Yeah, so. But that scene. Yeah, that scene is. It's really comical, comical.
But it wasn't supposed to be comical, and it was there, and it was interactive, in the same sense that anything else in that game was interactive.
Kind of, yeah.
Well, you could screw it up or not based on your inputs.
Literally. But
the point I'm trying to make, all of our sophomorism aside, is that these sorts of things do create, in, you know, compelling material for games the same way they make compelling material for movies. And I think instead of outright banning stuff like that, we should simply corral it. I agree with making something financially not viable, because that's great, because people who do things purely for finances aren't making the best stuff anyway. So it's an automatic filter. And the people who still do put those things in are either giving their stuff out because they're doing it for the love of making games, or they're doing it to make a statement or any other noble reason.
Well, you've mentioned this numerous times in this discussion so far, is that you don't like centralized boards that say this is good, this is bad, but you do agree with it in movies.
Yeah, I sort of do.
Okay.
I'm trying to kind of reconcile that, because I just realized that these two statements really don't agree with each other.
Right. Okay, but here's my problem. Not that I have a problem with the bill in the sense that, okay, it's fine, it's doing something that may be considered morally correct. You know, it's not really limiting, it's making it a felony to sell that stuff to kids, which, okay, that's fine, because I think movies is the same way. You sell, like, explicit movie, not necessarily rated R, but
an NC-17 movie is illegal to send to a kid, and I think it's sell to a kid, and I think it's, I don't know if it's a felony.
Okay.
I can't say that.
Well, in any case, that's fine. But you don't see the New York Senate or anyone else setting up an advisory board to monitor the actions of the MPAA.
That is interesting. The MPAA is a self-regulating body.
So is the ESRB.
Well, I mean, it's the movies volunteer.
Right.
For MPAA ratings.
Same thing with the ESRB.
Same thing with games. Yeah.
Where's the advisory board for the MPAA? Where's the, you know, where, how about that? Well, how do we know that if the rating system for movies is okay, why isn't the rating system for games okay? It's not that I have a problem with the bill. It's the methodology that, look, we have to monitor the ESRB because they're not doing a good job. Well, why don't you monitor the MPAA as well?
Did they attempt to do that when the MPAA was new?
Yeah, I think so.
And did it die out eventually? It must have because it's gone now.
Yeah, I forget what the exact story is. I think they tried. It tried to be regulatory, and it didn't work. I don't remember.
Maybe they were just going to see the same thing happen.
Well, I hope so.
Maybe some politician's going to make that their platform, then get voted down now that all the game players are of voting age.
Yeah, I can't wait till the game players are of politician age. That will be interesting.
This is nothing like Civilization. I want out.
I've played SimCity, and this is way more complex.
This is nothing like The Sims. You guys are talking in language that I can understand. I can't ignore you and make you set the microwave on fire anymore.
Or put you in the pool and take the ladder away.
Sitting up at making a statement to the press, he whispers aside to his advisor, "How do I click?"
All right, well, when we come back, we're going to talk about some actual game news that relates to games.
That was pretty newsy and gamey.
Yeah, and controversial in some ways.
How is that not actual game?
Well,
right,
I mean,
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, news that's specifically about a particular game, including the next installment of the Fallout franchise, which you got your first look at yesterday. We'll talk about that. In the meantime, we're going to take a music break. If you want to email us, pressstartkcpr@gmail.com. That's the email address. It'll be open all this week, all right now, from here on out. If you want to say something, put your feedback into the show. And we'll give you the address for the website a little bit later on, so stick around. Adrian Holovaty with some Super Mario remix titled Gypsy Jazz. We are back. We're going to close out the show here in the next 10, 15 minutes. Dave, I know you had stuff you wanted to say.
I have two quick stories. The first story is Jeff Green from OneUp.com has let loose on his blog that their new cover, having one of those exclusives that, you know, games or game magazines love to have, is apparently going to feature a new game for one of PC gaming's oldest franchises, in his words. He quantified the number of fans as a bazillion. What I don't know what that means, but it's apparently a lot.
Oldest franchises.
One of the oldest franchises, which I have to think has to be like Zork or MechWarrior or something. The first MechWarrior came out in 89 and has lots of fans. Zork has been around forever. Maybe Space War, I don't know. Pong 2, come on, Pong 2. But we don't know what it is, we just know it's going to be premiered Friday on his blog. So while I hate to direct traffic to sites that are not ours because I am greedy, it's...
at least you admit it.
Well, yeah. I'm trying not to be hypocritical again. I want to know what this is, and I suspect a lot of other people do too. This will be a PC game. So I don't know.
Interesting.
Second story is Weight Watchers.
I hope this PC game turns out to be something like really old, like maybe like the Bard's Tale.
I was thinking of like a first person shooter, NetHack, where you just walk around and stuff kills you.
I played that game for the first time the other day.
Isn't that game hard?
I didn't really get it.
Yeah, it takes a while to get.
It's really
hard.
Yeah, I hear it's really hard. I couldn't deal with the whole like graphics or lack of.
That I usually trot that game out whenever someone says they like gameplay over graphics.
NetHack.
People usually stop telling me they like gameplay over graphics.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
Great gameplay.
Yeah.
The second story is that Weight Watchers has come up on their site, and I saw this on a blog or web posting somewhere that apparently when you get hungry, you eat a lot, and you eat a lot because you're thinking about
really?
Food.
Really? Yeah. I can't believe that. Well, I'm so happy.
The second statement is the important one, that you're thinking about food and visualizing it.
I just want to say that when I get hungry, I do want to eat, and I never noticed that before.
And they're recommending that if you start playing a game right about then, that occupies your attention, your hunger will pass. So they're now recommending portable games be carried around as a weight-watching tool.
I can see that working, and also, from my own experience, and... I usually go about it the other way. Not, oh, when I get hungry, I should play a game. It's, oh, I should play a game. And then when I get hungry, I'm like, oh, I should play a game. So I just never eat.
See, I sat there, would this work for me? And then I sat there and thought about, you know, because I'm overweight. So I said, all right, let's try this. And I said,
brutally honest.
When do I eat stuff? I usually eat stuff when I'm sitting on the couch, feet propped up on the table playing a video game. Like, huh, I should stop doing that instead. These are related.
These are. Well,
all right, anyway. That's those are my quick stories.
Okay. We've also got a couple of stories. Fallout 3, speaking of old PC franchises, Fallout 3 is coming 2008, and they released the teaser trailer yesterday, did Bethesda, who they're developing Fallout 3, and they're the same developers behind Oblivion, as you know. What I find interesting about this whole story that's kind of getting overlooked is that Interplay, which is actually still around, the company still exists somehow, Interplay is still around. They sold the rights to Fallout to Bethesda so they could make Fallout 3. And at the same time, Interplay, I think, you know, they're pretty much on the verge of bankruptcy, I believe. They're basically basing all of they're banking on this development of a Fallout MMO that they're constructing right now. And that's supposed to come out by 2009, I believe. And so you've got two different Fallout games coming in the next couple of years. Which is, you know, good for fans of the series. This new Fallout 3, it's coming for the, I would think, the 360 and the PC. Actually, it might just be coming for the 360 as well. I'm not quite sure. I would imagine it would come for the PC as well, but it looks crazy. Looks crazy.
I never played Fallout.
I
really should. Yeah. I think I bought it. I can't remember. They had those little two game packs that had Fallout 1 and 2.
Well, if Fallout 3 is anything like the quality of Oblivion... then I am all over it. I am all over it.
He's all over it.
I'm all over it, folks. Okay, next story. Sony. Sony is rumored to be to have a redesigned PSP in development. Something that's more efficient, etc. A new patent filing is a Sony PSP-like device. It was filed last November, and it's a PSP that also acts as a phone. So, if you can imagine... you're laughing over here.
I N-Gage and tacos.
And tacos?
Yeah, you know the N-Gage looked like a little taco, and you stuck it up to your ear?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you side-talked?
Yeah, well, the first one, the redesign, you didn't do
well, that. So the N-Gage tried to make side-talking, spelled with an N and apostrophe at the end. They tried to make that into some hip sort of phrase, much in the same way that Sony tried to make the PSP hip with that All I Want for Christmas is a PSP video.
Right.
That was supposed to be viral and instead was basically just like a virus as opposed to spreading. It was more infectious.
To itself.
I don't know.
So check this out. This is not for sure that this is going to be what's coming out for the PSP. If it gets redesigned, it's going to look like this. But I think what's cool about this, you know, it will be a phone, and you know, I don't necessarily need that, so I'll probably just stick with the older model if I get one, which I Rondo. I gotta pick up Rondo. But what's cool is that if you could imagine the PSP flipping, like turning about itself to like, so you take the back half of the PSP and the front half of the PSP and twist them in opposite directions and you get sort of a cross design.
That's different than how if you took the left side of the PSP and the right side of the PSP and twisted it, your game would fly out while you're playing.
Right, yeah, you know, you don't want to do that. I'm talking about the half and half, the back half and front half.
Okay.
So the back half where the UMD goes in, the front half where the screen is. If you twist those 90 degrees opposite each other, you get sort of a cross shape.
Yeah, like a plus sign batarang that you can throw at Dracula.
Yes, exactly. Only if you have enough hearts. And so basically, this is what the new PSP would look like. The screen would shift into three different positions, which is pretty cool. And you talk, when you flip it like that, you could talk into here and talk into one part of the cross. I don't know. I mean, as a redesign, it's pretty cool.
Nifty devices with features are awesome.
Right.
It seems required now if you're reporting on games to, whenever you mention Sony, to start analyzing it from a business perspective as an amateur market analyst. And I'll look at this and I say, unless you get some high-end executives to make a fad out of this, it's going to go the way of the N-Gage or the Gizmodo.
I agree. I agree because this will probably, if it is a phone, it'll be way more expensive. But I just want a gaming device. And the PSP is a pretty cool gaming device right about now. So, you know, well, at E3, I think, you know, if we're going to see a redesign, it's going to be announced at E3 next month. And unfortunately, we won't be able to cover it because the show will be over and Internet School will be out as well. But, you know, if you're looking, if you haven't got a PSP yet, I would wait, just hold out one more month, see what Sony's got up their sleeves at E3.
They've also got that price cut for the PS3 that they're not having. that they should maybe be having. Well, because they've had that guy come out like two or three times and say, we're maybe cutting the price on it. And then the lesser guys are coming out and saying, no, we're never going to cut the price. And now their boss is coming out and say, well, maybe.
Well, here's what's interesting. This week, Sony's releasing a Blu-ray player that's about half a grand.
Hmm.
And that's cheaper than the PS3. So that could that mean a price cut? Maybe.
It could be that the Blu-ray players just aren't that expensive to produce, considering they're putting them in the VIOS already.
Yeah.
And it's certainly not, it doesn't add $500 to the VIOS price. Nobody would buy it then.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Interesting.
Although they are, from what I understand, winning the format war.
Yeah,
against HD
definitely.
DVD.
Blu-ray is overtaking HD DVD.
That surprised me. I did not expect that.
I did.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you win this one then.
Touche, salesman. All right, our final story of the week, and this is, you know the game Fear?
I do know the game Fear.
First Encounter, Assault, Recon, Scary Little Girls. That's also what I like to call it, because they're kind of, it features a scary little girl.
I don't think that game would have sold nearly as many copies if it had the exact same cover art and the word Scary Little Girls up at the top. Well, man, let's get together and play some SLG multiplayer.
There are scary little girls in that game.
I think there's a scary little girl.
Okay, there's
a shows up a bunch of times.
Yes, well, she's scary.
She is.
Okay.
She's little and she's a girl.
Yeah.
Still don't know that that's a compelling
title,
though.
Apropos, that's the second time I've said that this week. All right, well, okay, so there's a split. Between the developer and the publisher, developer Monolith Productions, they were allowed to keep the game world and scenario of Fear. Vivendi, who published it, is allowed to keep the name Fear. So now you have these two companies. They're both making sequels, okay? Vivendi is allowed to call the game Fear 2. Monolith, the original developer, is not allowed to call the game Fear 2, but they're allowed to have their game take place in the same world.
Is the Fear 2 made by Vivendi allowed to take place in the same world?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I was going to say, this is pretty awesome. Instead of having like fights over IP, you give the people who are really important to a world who the gamers pay attention to the ability to make the real sequel. And then all the people with the marketing who want to push on that end can go take the name. And then everybody gets what they want, and the people who are upset about one side can go find the other side.
Well, yeah, I don't know if Vivendi is allowed to develop.
Well, maybe it isn't, but then, you know, Quake 2 didn't follow Quake 1's world. Nobody cared.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, in any case, the new Fear by Monolith Productions can't be called Fear, so they're holding a contest on their website. Name the next Fear game. Except
Fear Faye.
Ear Fae?
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you submit that, maybe you'll win. Anyways, by June 22nd, if you submit your idea for a title, three finalists will be chosen. They'll be flown out to Monolith Productions studio, which I guess if you live in SoCal, I think they're in SoCal, you won't need to fly anywhere. But you'll get a tour of the studios, and they're actually going to put you in the game. So that's pretty cool. It won't be called Fear. It'll be called whatever you chose
it
to be.
You walk around on your knees and dress up like a little girl.
But the girl is back for this one. The scary little girl is back. So that's what's coming out of Monolith Productions. Just thought you should know in case you have a good idea, in case you love fear.
I really ought to play that game. I hear it's good.
Yeah. I tried the demo on the 360. Controls, not that good. Play the PC version.
I like to play the original version whenever I can.
Yeah, there you go. All right, that's going to do it for the show this week. Going to wrap things up. Thanks for coming out, Dave. You'll be here next week?
I will be here next week.
We'll be here next week.
Thanks for having me going.
Oh,
again,
yeah.
As always.
Next week will be fun. We're going to have a fun time next week.
Are
there going to be some fun times next week. You should definitely tune in. Some surprises and some humor, hopefully. We're going to just have a good time, laid back, send off the show with good time. So check out the website, pressstart.thefighting.org. That's where you can download the show, leave some comments, etc. For Dave Hampton, I'm Justin Fascino. Game over.